Sidiganjiri Nemato
Welcome back to Once Upon a Time in Wakanda. I'm Tyler.
I'm Bo.
I'm Aaron.
Season 2 is here. We've already kicked it off with episode 1, talking about everyone's pre-Thanos peak Marvel villain, Killmonger. And yes, I am just saying everything's pre-Thanos, post-Thanos. That's just how it is. We talked about Eric Stevens, Killmonger, in the previous episode. And at the end, we had this question. Bo and I kind of had this back and forth where we said, maybe there's a way we can bridge Killmonger and T'Challa. I feel like I'm part Killmonger, part T'Challa.
But not Aaron. Aaron's like, I'm all Killmonger.
Aaron's like, Killmonger, I'm full Killmonger.
On the Killmonger, Killmonger party. Killmonger's going to make Wakanda great again.
I will say, I will say though, Aaron's beard is killing Killmonger. So Aaron's beard is killing everybody.
Yes.
Mbaku, Killmonger, T'Challa, me.
You know, you know what your beard, actually the beard is very, this is like completely off topic, but God of War. Have you seen the latest God of War?
Yes, absolutely. Very yeah, God of War.
You got a God of War beard going on
okay,
right now.
Okay.
So in answering to that question, Killmonger and T'Challa, is there a bridge between them? Bo mentioned Nakia. Now, Nakia is kind of a very interesting wild card character because it's easy for her in all the cadre of characters in Black Panther to kind of miss her. She's kind of like in between everything. She's in the midst of everything. She's at the beginning of the movie. She's in key points of the movie. She seems to always be at the right place at the right time, so which is kind of interesting. But at the same time, she's very pivotal in pushing forward this conversation between Killmonger, T'Challa, kind of being somewhat of a voice of reason. And part of that is because we open the film with a scene after we get the classic, you know, opening. We're in Oakland. After all of that, we open and our introduction to T'Challa is, he's going in for a quote unquote mission to extract her as a war dog assassin, to extract her from an embedded mission, an undercover mission that she's in. And then we get the iconic line from Okoye, "Don't freeze when you see her." And then T'Challa's like, "I never freeze," which is still such a great line, you know, it's still.
Yeah.
And then that opening when you have they have, I don't know what that is, but they have the little simulation of the cars moving and then it just comes up like it's a cartoon. I'm like, yo, this is kind of crazy. They couldn't pick it up. It's like, yo, this Wakanda tech is nuts. Yes. So he sees Nakia and of course he freezes and we see that Nakia is Lupita Nyong'o. What do y'all think about the casting of Lupita Nyong'o as Nakia?
It's interesting because Lupita in this movie, excellent. If you had told me who she was playing, like knowing who she was playing going in was almost kind of like a tip off that they're gonna make this character their own, because there's no way you get this actress to play this character if you know the character from the source material.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that in a minute, because I think a lot of people are unaware of the turn that she takes in the source material. And I'm kind of hoping it really happens in the movies, but we'll get to that in a minute. But Lupita Nyong'o, Aaron.
I thought it was genius, man. I thought it was genius. And what I didn't anticipate and what I thoroughly enjoyed was the chemistry that Lupita and Chadwick Boseman had on camera, man. It was very real and so believable. Like, you know that we've had these iconic pairings on the big screen that where there was so much chemistry and it was so believable that we would like almost think that they were couples like outside of it. Like that you're trying to read stuff into it, like, oh, they just took a picture together. I think they're holding hands. They must be a couple.
Well, I don't want to break something on air, you know. I don't want to break it live. I'm just saying sources tell me. Nah, I'm kidding. But you're right, though. There's that connection, especially in that scene when they're walking through Wakanda, like on the ground.
Right.
And then you see the Dor Milaje trailing them, you know, guarding the king. And they're just having this playful banter back and forth. You make a great king. I would make a great, if I wanted to, it was just that back and forth. And she's always pressing the argument. But before we get into that, Bo, talk a little bit about the source material and why it's significant for Nakia to be the love interest of T'Challa in this movie versus her comic arc.
Okay. I feel like I'm about to break some hearts right now. Like,
go ahead.
We talked,
that's what we do here.
We talked last season about M'Baku and kind of the art of the redemptive retcon. And while not quite as extreme as M'Baku, what they did with Nakia's character was really quite something, because they very much made her something very different than who she is in the comics. In the comics, she is actually a member of the Dora Milaje, mm-hmm. whereas in the movie, obviously she's not. In fact, when given the opportunity to wear the armor, she goes so far as to point out specifically, I am not Dora Milaje.
That's right.
Not that she's, mm-hmm. you know, negating that or saying that's bad. She's just, right, you know, stating it very clearly. That is just not who she is. In the comics, at a very young age, she was brought in as a Dora Milaje. Of course, as we've already discussed last season, the Dora Milaje of the comics are kind of created as essentially, you know, brides to be of the Black Panther. Mm-hmm. And even though T'Challa kind of changed that mindset during his rule, in the comics, that it's still part of the structure of what that organization was meant to be. And for Nakia specifically, she started to develop very strong feelings for him. In fact, maybe some very unhealthy feelings for mm-hmm. him. This was actually taken to an extreme where T'Challa was actually brainwashed by the character Mephisto into believing that Nakia was his, at the time, I believe, fiance, but fiance. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then actually kisses her. And this takes this kind of girl crush, you know, childhood crush that she has all the way up to
that king kiss. It's a wrap, homie.
And so now she has become obsessed with T'Challa, and she finds other means to try to have this kind of physical contact with him at every stage in the game. But ultimately, he rejects her, and she can't deal with the loss of, you know, him not, you know, reciprocating her emotions. And it drives her literally crazy. Mm-hmm. She becomes the character known as Malice, mm-hmm. A villain who is driven by her love and obsession with T'Challa, and not at all what the character is from the big screen. You know, in fact, very specifically the opposite of, who Nakia is in the movie.
You know, it's interesting, kind of T'Challa's love interest in the comics, and kind of how I'd love to see that play out in kind of a popular on the big screen, because everyone assumes that Storm and T'Challa are like true loves.
No.
And in reality, that is not true. Like, Monica Lynn is like true, like, love. Like, I would say she's been with him for so long. Like, he saved her, she saved him. Like, it's a better, but it just sounds good for people. I always cringe, and it makes me like itch whenever people are like, oh, I want to see Storm and T'Challa. So if we see Storm and T'Challa, I'm like, they ain't really like that. Like, it's kind of an arranged situation. Like, it ain't really, they ain't really like in love. Yeah, it's very strategic. They're not really like actually in love. And so Nakia turns. And so the question that we asked even before the recording, and we're not even going to wait till the end to speculate this, but are we going to see this? Are we going to see this turn? Are we going to see this shift in the big screen? And I say, absolutely. You have to. Mm. There has to be some sort of shift. There has to be taking this care. And I believe that Lupita, the fact that she's so likable, it's going to make things very interesting for T'Challa, because she's going to be a character that people root for. She's going to be a character that people are like, oh, well, he did her wrong. Like, it was something bad. Like, come on. Like, this is something that, like, she, even the ways in which he hasn't really fully committed to her, like, or like, why haven't they been together before? Like, why haven't they been together? Like, what separated them? Is it her? Is it him? Like, what's going on here?
I got the sense from the way they interacted, like, they had something in the past that didn't work out.
I kind of felt like it wasn't that he wasn't fully committed. It almost seemed like she was reluctant to have all of her identity wrapped up in her relationship with him.
Which, again, totally stark opposite to the cop.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Right. You know, like, cause I didn't know how they would portray her. Mm. Right. And so you see her sitting there, you know, in that five ton, you know, with the rest of those people who had been taken captive, And I'm like, man, what's going to happen? And then it turns out like, oh man, I mean, she's, you know, she's an accomplished warrior and agent in her own right. And she, at first, she isn't like, oh, I'm so glad you're here. She's like, I was in the middle of something. Like, right. I had something going on and, mm-hmm. And you interrupted it. So
busting up a human trafficking ring.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's going to be interesting because I think that because of where they left off, which seemed like a really good place, right? And because of the deviation from the source material, then the thing that causes them to split, which I would love to see Lupita play, Malice. Yeah, yeah. I would love to see that.
Even if for a limited sense, like she's brainwashed, you know, and then that it leads to that. That would be amazing.
Exactly. Wait, I need to understand something, Tyler. So you're saying, because if I'm following you, Aaron, you're saying that you would love to see her kind of her flip or her to be opposed to T'Challa because of her kind of moral standings of how Wakanda should enact the rest
based
of the
on what they've done thus far, right. I'm saying that it's gonna that's probably what's gonna it's gonna be ideology that fractures their relationship. Right.
Whereas Tyler, you actually want her to be the lovesick high schooler.
No, I want her to be a villain.
But like, but how? Like,
it doesn't really matter to me. But I think the ideology thing. We'll get into the ideology.
I think you said brainwashed just now.
No, what I'm saying is, I feel like even I want to see her play that character. To see how that would affect T'Challa. Because I think T'Challa, we have put T'Challa through so much that now to the point that brother's died like 5 times that's in like half a movie. Now I'm just like, yo, you killed his father. You had to watch his father die in front of him. Mm. You know, he's fading away. Just give it everything. Like, just go all the way. Like, his love interest turns on him. He got to fight her, or she kills his mom, or something like that. No, let's just go.
You even say that? Don't say that.
But see, what I'm saying is, let's just go all the way because we're making T'Challa face everything.
Interesting.
And I'm just saying, hey, let's keep going. I feel like it would add depth to his character, and I feel like the tension between, man, I love this woman. But then she betrayed me and, oh, but was it really, it wasn't me. Well, how can you get over that? And then eventually he just rejects her because I can't get over what you did. I can't get over the fact that you betrayed. It doesn't matter if you were brainwashed or not. Like, I feel like that's good tension in the storyline to be like, come on, man, you can see past that. Or no, he's actually got a point. So to me, I don't really care how it happens. I just want to see that tension. And I think Lupita would play a very good villain.
No doubt.
I think she would be a good villain.
It would have to be like, all right, so her becoming a villain, it's hard to see that shift happening all at once.
Sure.
Because they do establish her as kind of, you know, between her and Shuri. Yeah, and I was about to say Okoye, but not even Okoye, because she ends up obviously siding temporarily with Killmonger. But like, in terms of like belief structure of kind of driving force, like she is one of, if not the most heroic characters in the entire film. She doesn't have enough time to really kind of, you know, be anything other than that. Cause mm-hmm. she kind of steps in and she kind of presents an argument, and it's a pretty solid argument. It to some extent, it kind of takes a lot of, you know, the, you know, T'Challa and Killmonger and even M'Baku, not M'Baku, but, Wakabi, like mm-hmm. bringing in a lot of these kind of different thoughts
right.
that are surrounding as T'Challa, as he's trying to figure out what his role is going to be. And it seems like hers is kind of the perfect blend, but you disagree, Tyler. You don't think she knows what she's talking about.
I'm going to get to that at the end.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to get to that at the end. I want to save that because I've been hearing too much noise about this. We're going to talk about this. I want to talk about one thing before then, and that's, I feel like there's tension between Nakia and the Dora Milaje. I feel like there's a heavy tension between them, and I think it is expressed in the back and forth with Okoye, and I think it came out.
Because she's a war dog?
Yeah. And because she's not committed to anything. That's what Okoye said. What are you committed to? It just comes out. It just she lashes out, and it's this deep. It's this deep undercurrent. Bro. I feel like she is at odds, and I feel like there. You know, she's a plus. Pick up on this. If I'm not mistaken, She is the tribal representative of the merchant tribe.
The river tribe specifically.
Is it the river tribe? She's, are you sure?
100%. And it's actually, I believe that she's the daughter of the dude with the disc.
I thought he was merchant. Who's the merchant tribe?
Merchant is the lady with large earrings, the gold earrings.
But see, the brother has a good suit. He got it from the merchant tribe.
I'm sure he got it from the merchant tribe.
But yeah, what I'm saying is, if you think about it, if she's able to be tribal representative of any of the tribes, and she's able to be a war dog, and she has T'Challa's heart and his ear, and she's able to step in and out, and she's able to step away from the... It's like, man, how would you feel as a member of the Dora Milaje that this woman can just go off and do whatever, and I've got to stand at attention whenever Okoye taps twice?
Okay, well, here's the thing, though, because, you know, we talked about, even, I think, last episode a little bit about kind of the various military aspects of Wakanda. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you've got the border tribe, and they've got kind of their role in defending Wakanda. And then you've also got the Dora Milaje, which exists specifically as the king, you know, the King's Guard. But then you do have the war dogs that exist separately. I mean, Aaron, I'm kind of curious, like, from a military standpoint, is there kind of this tension between, I guess, groups within the military? You might even have to unpack the various groups of how that
I wish y'all could see his face. He's like, oh, that's like, you open a can of worms right now.
Absolutely. There is a difference. And it's not just competitive, right? So, so for instance, if you were to ask a Marine, you know, like what's your overall purpose and goal? Like, how do you see yourself? And so I think a Marine would say, we are elite. We don't have like a force. And then we have elites within. We are elite. Each and every one of us are elite. Right. And not only that, we exist for the purpose of projecting power and for the purpose of taking and conquest. Right. And so, well, what about the army? Well, you know, I mean, they have some elites with them, but they exist more to just kind of occupy and just kind of hold down what's there, you know, like, and so, you know, they kind of come in after we've done the brunt of the work, after we've been at the tip of the spear. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you would hear, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you have those differences of philosophy that exist, and especially if we're applying that to the war dogs, Dora Milaje, you know, and the tribes, like specifically, the border tribe and what they do in times of great crisis, then those differences are magnified, right? And so if we're applying that to Wakanda, what has just happened in Wakanda? Because if we're dealing with the sequel, we're talking about in the aftermath of Infinity War, where we see, we're introduced to Wakanda and we're like, whoa, this is amazing. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. And it looks like a place, as you're introduced in the movie, that has been relatively untouched by catastrophe and by hardship, right? But now, you know, it's a place that's going to be kind of picking up the pieces. And so when you're dealing with situations like that, then
that's interesting. Like, never hit by catastrophe. You know, so that makes me think about Infinity War and how I believe it's M'Baku who says this will be the end of Wakanda. And like, you know, the fact that they're being challenged in a way they've never been challenged before, because they have always sat so far advanced. I was thinking about actually this morning on the way over here, like, you get the Guardians of the Galaxy and their first interaction with Earth is Wakanda. They're going to have a really kind of weird, like, they're going to think Earth is something that it's not.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that Wakanda is like the technology, the civilization is very much more in line with what we've seen with the Guardians as you go to these advanced planets. But the reality is like, no, that's just this one little pocket. The rest of the Earth is actually far behind the rest of the universe. Mm-hmm. Wakanda is actually with the rest of the universe, right? The rest of us.
Well, it's just Groot and Rocket. So that is one thing.
That's true. I guess I was thinking of like, what if Peter Quill actually, if I was wondering whether or not he would actually come to Wakanda.
Missouri and then Wakanda, right? Like, it's like, wait a minute.
Like, let me ask you this, though, because one of the things that Nakia is passionate about is opening up Wakanda for the benefit of the rest of the world, right?
Well, okay, we just going to go here now then.
I'm sorry. We want to open it up, right? So if we're talking about potential points of fracture and conflict, if that's going to happen, if that's going to be the trajectory for Nakia's character, for she and T'Challa to become enemies, then that misunderstanding that seed of separation, if you will, could be that. You see what happens when we open up? You see, you know what I'm saying?
Where was Nakia in Infinity War?
Ooh.
Hey, she's a war dog, man. She's not.
No. Don't. I don't think she's doing war dog stuff. I think she's doing the cultural exchange. Remember, I think she's doing cultural exchange stuff.
Shuri was in charge of cultural exchange and she was at Wakanda.
Nah, it was specifically science for.
Yeah.
For Shuri.
But I think there's other stuff that's going on that Nakia is over. I think Nakia is doing other sort of exchange
humanitarian
stuff. Humanitarian, what have you. I think that's what she's doing. And it's funny because our king dies, half our people are gone, we got invaded by people we can't beat, and where were you?
You were the one who said
we should open up our borders, and here you're gone when we get ransacked. I mean, and Wakanda's done.
It's Thanos, like literally half the universe died.
But that's the point, though.
But the focus that of the battle itself.
Did that have to happen to Wakanda? It didn't have to be fought right there. It didn't. And I'm telling you, man, I believe that Nakia is the most virtuous character. I do believe that. I think she has high integrity. But I think we're overrating the virtue element and we're underrating the fact that this is what happens when you open the doors for colonizers. This is what happens. This is what everybody's been saying.
Nakia didn't bring in Bucky. You know what I mean? Like,
but you could make a very strong argument considering her influence on T'Challa, right? They included those scenes where even in their kind of their banter back and forth, you see the differences between their views and some of the things that she wants to see happen and even her influence on him. And so you could make a strong argument that even some of the decisions that he makes, even in the end, like at the end of the movie, she has a great deal to do with that. Mm-hmm. And so this could turn out to be something that fosters a great deal of resentment within T'Challa towards her.
Well, here's what I'll say. Like, I don't think that Wakanda's policy is necessarily anti-immigrant. Wakanda's policy is cautious. It's extremely cautious. Now, there are certain people that would be anti-immigrant, like Wakabi, right? You bring the immigrants in, they bring their problems. That's very anti-immigrant.
Yeah.
But I think, especially you mentioned Bucky, within the right circumstances, if there's a need, yeah, of course we'll help. Like, we'll help someone who needs exile. Like, we help someone who has been wrongfully accused. Like, we'll help someone. And I think they would help, but the way Nakia was setting it up, it was like this, it seemed very like a radical open door, like, just come on in. And again, we're speaking within the context of the fictional universe.
Yes.
Knowing who was ready to exploit that, I feel like she doesn't think about what happens after that. Like, what happens next? How do we do it? And if you're gonna advocate it for it, you need to lead it. Like, you need to stay in Wakanda and you need to figure it out. Now, that might have been a tactical mistake by T'Challa, but I'm saying you need to stay in Wakanda and you say, okay, you wanna do this? I authorize you to do this, but you lead it. Because you're the person who said it, and now I'm dead again. I guarantee you, T'Challa's in the ancestral plane. Like, come on, fam. Like, how many times I'm going to die?
Well, I don't think he's there, but that's a whole other conversation.
We'll talk about that in another episode.
I don't think it's fair to point to Infinity War, because you've made this comparison. You made this comparison in our Infinity War review as well, about kind of this being kind of the direct answer to, you know, to how Black Panther ended, and specifically T'Challa going to the nations, opening up, and yada, yada, yada. The thing is, everything that happened in Infinity War would have happened without Black Panther, because it's in direct relation to what happened in Civil War. Like, Bucky is not there because Nakia or because of any argument. Sure. Bucky is there because T'Challa screwed up. And he sees, like, Bucky as his responsibility, right? Like, in fact, that you could even make the argument that he essentially did the exact reverse of what T'Chaka did in terms of, like, you know, like, oh, we're just going to, you know, I'm not going to bring anything outside of Wakanda into Wakanda. It's just out here. And even though this is my screw up, I'm going to leave it out here on the outskirts. Whereas T'Challa was like, no, I screwed up. I chased this guy all over and he's broken. And you know what? We'll take him in. We'll see if we can fix him. And from that standpoint, that's what established that relationship between him and Cap. I mean, you know, Wakanda opening up his borders. Cap was there. He was in Wakanda at the end of Civil War. So that, mm-hmm. that was, I did not perceive that to be after Black Panther. In fact, we know it wasn't because we actually got a chance right. to see Bucky at the post-credit scenes. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, and on top of that, Infinity War is such a uniquely non-earthly conflict. Like, it is so sure. outside the scope. Like, Wakanda doesn't represent a nation at that point. It represents Earth at that point. You know what I mean? Like, it is literally, you know, you had the, like, a brief battle in New York, and then you had, like, the all-out, like, war invasion on Wakanda.
And so we gonna die for the Earth.
No, by the way, I wrote a great article on that.
You did.
Excellent
article. But specifically, like, I don't disagree with where the argument leads, like what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I just don't think we've actually seen that play out yet. I do think that there will be kind of the repercussions for opening up Wakanda. I don't think Infinity War was it, though.
So I think what we're talking about here is the tension between Okoye and Nakia's statements. So Okoye says, I serve my country. Nakia says, no, I save my country. And it's in that context, it was related to something different. But seeing that tension between the two, of Okoye saying, I will uphold the noble traditions of Wakanda. And Nakia is saying, when the traditions are wrong, they're wrong. And so we can't even uphold the traditions if the semantics, it's semantics. And in that particular case, you would sit back and you would say, well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. At the same time, we're having the women kind of fight this out after T'Challa didn't have to accept the ritual combat. But we talked about that in season one. Go back to the last episode of season one and you'll see what I think about T'Challa foolishly accepting ritual combat when he didn't have to. But anyway, so I think it's that tension. I serve my country. I save my country. What do I do in that scenario? Do I protect the traditions? And then Nakia is saying there's so much more in the world. There's so much more in the world for us to experience, and we can help. We have responsibility because we have higher tech, because we have more advanced weaponry, because we have just more advanced technology. Come on, like, we can do this. I think there is a burden. I think it's a microcosm of the Black experience in this sense. There is a burden on Black people to be more noble than the rest of the world, to be the leaders of nobility without definition. So here's what we're asking. We're asking, people ask us to, oh, well, you need to forgive. Like, come on, open up. It's unity. It's reconciliation. It's this, it's that. And you just kind of sit back and you're like, nobility is right. Virtue is right. Integrity is right. And we should never drop those, even situationally. But the problem is they want us to have this without definition, without defining what that means. What does this actually mean for us? And I think there's this burden that Nakia kind of symbolizes that in some ways, I think it's just a little bit foolish. It's this idea that, oh, we just need to do the right thing. We can do it better. And it's like, no, don't just think about the fascination of bringing in the outside world. Think about your country and think about your country lasting for generations beyond you. And think about preserving what is good within your country while challenging what needs to be challenged, while challenging what needs to be pushed. And I feel like she was only, man, bring him in. Come on.
That was outside stuff. No, I did not get that from her character whatsoever.
I did, because every time she's talking to T'Challa, that's what she's talking about.
To me, she came across as extremely idealistic.
Like, what? Exactly. Like, that's what I would say. I just fall in that line, but go ahead.
Perhaps it actually would do good to kind of dive into what it means that she's a war dog.
Okay.
You know, I don't think that we've ever actually like kind of dealt with that. But
oh, that's good.
What war dogs essentially are in Wakanda is essentially the agents outside of Wakanda. So, you know, we talk specifically about how it's kind of closed off from the rest of the world. And while that is true, it's also kind of not, because you have these kind of agents that go out and are interacting with the world. You know, even, you know, I actually thought about the fact that, and I still haven't really racked my brain around this, but the merchant tribe, how does the merchant tribe have so much stuff from outside of Wakanda? Like, how does that actually get in?
Yeah, I was like, that's true.
Do the war dogs bring it in? That seems
true.
It might be. I don't know. But that's a good point. The reality is, so as part of this kind of elite group, you know, elite task force that goes out and does good in the world, she is almost arguing for the justification of her position, right? Like when there are so many people in Wakanda that want to pull back, she's like, no, we're out here. We're doing this. We're when you pulled me in to come to the funeral or to come to the ceremony, like it was specifically because, you know, what was I doing? I was disrupting a human trafficking ring. And we were, and you know, we were doing this as Wakandans with ability, with technology, with privilege, and using that to serve, like, as opposed to somebody like Killmonger that wants to use the ability to, you know, to dominate. You know, she kind of sees it as the same, like, well, if when given this privilege, it's better to use this to serve.
To that point, there is a quote that she mentions to T'Challa. She says, I've seen too many in need just to turn a blind eye. I can't be happy here knowing that there's people out there who have nothing. I think that's 100% true. And I think that's noble. But Aaron, you have to build on the idealistic part, because that's what I feel like it is. How is Nakia idealistic in Wakanda?
So it's not simply that Wakanda is just isolationist, right? It's the fact that Wakanda engages the world on its terms, and that the driving ideal behind their policy is to protect Wakanda.
Right.
It's almost like it's this, we know what the outside world is. It's not that we don't want to help, but in terms of looking at, if we act in this way, what's going to be the reaction, so on and so forth. But then when it's all said and done, it seems like the goal is always to, protect Wakanda at all costs, right? And so it's not, I think that the way that Nakia is portrayed, and the reason why I say that she's so idealistic, it's almost like, okay, we have the resources and we can help. We can help. But what I think is neglected is that when and if they would insert themselves into the problems of the world, the blowback that brings, I think that's what's neglected. Like if we insert ourselves, like for instance, so a good example would be disrupting the human trafficking thing. And now, again, I'm not arguing that we shouldn't do that. That's not what I'm saying. So don't hear what I'm not saying here. But what I am saying, but what I am.
Good. Yeah, this is good. This is the end of Once Upon a Time in Wakanda.
I was like, brother, and the entire thing just imploded because of Aaron. That's not what I'm, but what I am saying is, when you're disrupting human trafficking, you have to engage the traffickers. You have to engage the perpetrators, right?
Right.
And so what that does is that there are repercussions to that, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes when you start, so if I start a fight, then I have to be prepared for the fact that this may not be an open and closed case, right? There may be levels to it. There may be actions and things that, and so this may end up being prolonged. This may end up costing us more than we anticipated. It's not always as cut and dry as there's a need. We're going to swoop in. We're going to meet the need, and then everything is going to be okay.
But that's very military, like, because what Aaron sees is, okay, there's a dictator. We have to go and remove the dictator. There's a terrorist group. We have to go and remove the terrorist group. And if you do that, you have to occupy. And you have, if you occupy, you have to have 100,000 troops. If you have 100,000 troops, that means some people are going to die. And it's like, okay, are you thinking about all this? Yeah, exactly. Like, are you thinking about all of this at the same time as, okay, well, this is noble. We must do this. And it kind of gets into maybe the movie didn't really give us that tactical. It can't give us that tactical depth to see, like, this is tension.
It was a montage of, like, ideas, essentially, all of these different, like, here are a bunch of different characters from Wakanda, and here's kind of some core things that they're proposing to the king. You know, like, it wasn't like a, let's actually dive deep into any of these philosophies.
So the question is, if T'Challa does come back, will Nakia become the queen?
After Shuri?
What?
I think, look,
he really, but we got to talk about this in a speculation episode.
Yeah, we'll save
that. Really think
we'll save that.
I don't know about that. Yeah. Anyway,
Look for that one in the future. I would, I mean, I think from a fan standpoint, there like so many shippers out there behind their whole relationship. Like, I think there's a lot of desire to see the two get together, those two crazy kids. I think that she would make an excellent queen, but I do, you know, all right. So because we got all of these different characters kind of providing a lot of their philosophy, right? Like, it's easy to criticize her, Wakabi, Killmonger, for like, and Killmonger wasn't an advisor, but just in terms of like these ideologies that they mm-hmm. each embodied or represented, because it's easy in all of these situations to point out the idealistic, like, this is a good point, here's all the problems with it. This is a good point, here's all the problems with it. This mm-hmm. is a good point, here's all the problems with it. To some extent, when you are an advisor to whoever is in power, whoever is the leader, a lot of times you have to kind of make your point and drive to it and even mm-hmm. take a more idealistic approach because you're not the one making the decision, because you're trying to influence the one who is making the decision. Now, the person who is making the decision is the one that has to kind of discern through that and kind of say like, okay, yes, you make good points. We're going to do this, but we're not going to go all the way. And like, well, why not? Well, there's reasons why not. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who's taking in more than just this one ideology, I have to be able to kind of like, you know, make those calls. So
that's actually a great point.
That's a good
like
point.
Being a number two, having been a number two in an organization and being a number two in an organization, uh-huh. I have to pull and make it almost more extreme because there's such a, man, I have to get my point in and I have a limited amount of time and I have to convince you.
There it is.
So I almost have to go too far
mm-hmm.
and I know all this won't work, but I've got to kind of pull you as far as I can because I have to get your attention and then I have to give you the full facts so that you can make an informed decision. It seems like, though, especially with Nakia, she may have that romantic connection with T'Challa is almost a skewing of what would be sound advice. And so the question is, did T'Challa actually make the decision ultimately because he felt that it was the best information and that was it? Or did he make it because it's really good information and I love this woman?
Aaron, do you think that he made the decisions he made specifically because of Nakia?
I don't think that he made it specifically because of her, but I think that we shouldn't downplay her influence.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was definitely an influence. And I think that her being happy with it, because it wasn't simply the fact of whether or not she was right or wrong, right? But the fact that if they were to continue within a relationship and his character honoring her, right? Like that humanitarian passion that she had. So it's not that I'm trying to do the right thing and the best thing for Wakanda, but there's also underneath that, man, but if I do this as well, this creates a platform for her and she gets to do what she wants to do and she's happy. So
oh, come on. No.
Bro, that's human nature, man.
Yeah, man.
Bro, it's serving the country and yourself. I'm just being real. Like, yeah, she going to look at me like, bruh. But I mean, it's the right thing to do. But yeah, this could be dope, though.
So two things. And I cannot believe, I feel like I'm more nerdy on this podcast than I ever have been on any other podcast. And I do.
That's
geek,
what we want.
I do exactly. Geek podcast. I'm Flash TV talk panel screen. I do geek podcast. But here y'all are making me go to levels of nerd that I don't normally do. So two things on that level. One is what you're talking about in terms of like interacting, but not really. Just very much reminds me of kind of the Star Trek Prime Directive, which is like this idea that like, oh, we can go to planets and like observe, but we can't get involved because if we get involved, we end up creating all these unique problems. But then they end up doing it. And then, you know,
they always do it.
Right. Because I mean, like at the end of the day, you know, you see something, you see a situation going south and you feel like you have to, you know, you have to, in order to live with yourself, if you've got the ability to go in and, you know, save the day, then where do you walk the line? I feel like that's what the War Dogs represent to some extent, is they figure out how to walk the line. So she can take a little bit more of an idealistic approach because she's lived that more idealistic approach. The other thing in terms of her potentially becoming a villain, again, kind of last episode made a Warcraft reference. I'm about to do it again.
Yes.
There's this character of Jaina Proudmoore from the Warcraft universe. And she's like this, she's this mage. She's a magician. And when you meet her early on in the franchise, she's very young, she's very naive, incredibly talented. And, you know, she ends up, you know, befriending a lot of her enemies. A lot of, you know, she discovers that this, you know, orcish horde that's coming in to destroy the land is actually, they're kind of displaced from their home world, and they're trying to kind of find their way. And so
got
to
hear both sides, man.
So she hears where they're coming from, and she ends up, befriending them, even betraying her own father, leading to his death in order to make sure they have a place in this world.
Bruh.
She even establishes, her entire city, on their land, so kind of as this kind of peace cohabitation type deal. She's always pressing for peace when the world is pushing towards war, up until the rise of this particular orc leader, known as Hellscream, Garrosh Hellscream, who then rises up his people and absolutely decimates her city and her, because they're such an easy target. And he's trying to rally around, you know, all of these characters to kind of create this war force that'll go and wipe out humanity. And so, and she's such an easy target because she's been pushing for this kind of, you know, outreach and being involved in everything else. And as the sole survivor of her city, with like the literal ashes of her people, like in her hands, it pushes her to a dark place. And like, she does a complete 180 that, based on her character, you know, her character journey, you totally see it. So I could theoretically see Nakia in the next movie going even stronger into this kind of ideological mindset, pushing more and more, and perhaps even at the end of the film being put in a position that ends up switching it, where she ends up losing those close to her, maybe her father. Maybe we actually see her rise to the leader of her tribe. You know, we talked about this. We didn't get enough lore beyond the border tribe. We really didn't get a lot of lore about, you know, some of these other tribes, and the Jabari tribe as well, and Black Panther tribe, but, you know, Merchant River, like I want to see what's going on. Mining, like, there could be a lot of aspects of that, which, you know, in conclusion, she ends up losing her family because of her decisions, because she was a little bit more naive, perhaps. And on top of that, now she has power in a tribe. Now she sits at the exact same level of an M'Baku or a T'Challa without being kind of the head chief. So I don't know. I could definitely really see her being in that
really
role.
Good. Yeah, I think, you know, on a flip side, one of the things I think if we're being charitable to Nakia, we can give her credit, because what she's really pushing Wakanda to be is what America thinks it is.
Ooh.
Like, so she's saying,
Steve Rogers.
She's saying, no, we can be the superior country in the world. Like, we can do it better than America. We can be better than America. We are better than America. And in a sense, if you're viewing it charitably, she kind of takes the responsibility that Wakanda is the premier nation in the world to its fullest extent, which is, you know, we should probably help other people. Yeah. And we should probably help those who are in need, because we have the capability, we have the infrastructure, we have the technology, and we have the integrity to actually make that happen. I'd be very curious to see after Infinity War if she shifts.
I agree with that.
I'd just be very curious just to hear if she shifts, because she's not going to, I don't perceive she comes back to the greatest reception in Wakanda. Yeah. I don't perceive that she comes back to the greatest applause.
I agree
I don't think
that.
People are going to be like, yay, Nakia, even if everything is reversed. Because even if everything is reversed, what Wakanda is dealing with right now is a loss of control. Normally, they can control all their conflicts. There is no control as to whether or not T'Challa or any of their people ever come back. And even the ones, even if they bring back the people who have disappeared, they've still lost a massive part of their force from the invaders. The invaders have killed people that didn't disappear. They've just killed people.
Right.
And so now they, even if everything is reversed, they're like, we lost control and we can't lose control. And so I'm very curious to see if she at least admits in some sense, this wasn't what I intended. It wasn't my plan. I didn't know this was going to happen. I think it would be a good move, because I think if she doubles down, then I think you get what I hope you get, which is Nakia versus Okoye in Black Panther 2. But, you know, I hope we kind of see that.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I wouldn't presume too much in terms of what the fallout. Infinity War 2 aka Avengers 4, aka Avengers not Endgame. Like it's
Avengers Assembled, aka Avengers Disassembled, not, but whatever.
You know, one thing's for sure. I mean, I think one thing's
nothing is for sure.
Yeah, you're right.
Nothing is for sure.
Well, I guess that's my point though, right? Like, we don't know that by the time of Black Panther 2 that the events of Infinity War will still be like canonical. If you're like it's very possible that it may be undone.
If they do that, I'm gonna be so mad if they do that.
But you know that
you can't just completely erase it. You can't erase it.
Yeah. I think they're not gonna fully erase.
It's an annual, but you can't erase it.
No, but like you know Black Panther's coming back. And yeah, along with him, the other half of the universe. Like they're all
at what cost though? That's what I say. At what cost?
I think the cost is going to be an emotional one, not necessarily it's going to be miniaturized, not macro. Like it's going to be very much it'll be the cost of the original six Avengers. It won't be like the planet. It won't be like, you know, society. It won't be like half the universe. I don't think so.
Right. But I think Wakanda's people have still died on the battlefield defending the universe.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Pre-snap.
I think pre-snap.
I got you.
We still going to have some massive issues. Cause think about it. If some of the people who disappeared had already died, they come back and there's dead bodies on the ground.
Mm.
Dead bodies on the ground in Wakanda. Yay, our king's back. Oh, like, that's deflating, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just very curious as to how that's going to play itself out. And I'm also curious to see if Nakia will remain a war dog. Will she remain a war dog? Will she come back? Is there, like, these are the things that her character has to decide that will really set the arc for her character. And I'm trying to figure, is it best for Black Panther if they kind of play up on this love interest? Or is it best for Black Panther if they make her turn?
It's there, man. The ships. You got to get the shippers what they want.
So is Nakia the hero? Is that what we're saying?
I think she is a hero. At this point,
is she? No, you said she was the hero.
Oh, no. Yeah.
In that sense.
Is she the hero of Black Panther, the first film?
Yeah.
Is she in kind of that morally righteous position?
Yeah.
But mostly because, she wasn't given the screen time that a lot of the other characters were.
No, that's very true.
So all we got is her ideological views. Which, apart from extreme criticism, stand as ideological views. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so to some extent, yeah, she does represent, I believe, kind of the more heroic minded of the characters presented. Hmm. But, you know, given more time, maybe not the case.
Right.
Hopefully, yeah, She'll get a lot more time in the next movie.
Aaron, yeah, is she absolutely the hero?
She's a hero. But she's not the hero.
Oh, okay.
Who's the
We're
hero
talking about
pastor?
of the first movie?
Yeah, I was like, it's the way he looked at me, I was like, no, no, don't do it. I know where this is going. That's hilarious. Yeah, I think she was noble and virtuous and heroic.
Yeah.
But I think she opened the door.
And I say a hero because she was so pivotal. You know, she was a pivotal character, even without the, you know, as much screen time as the others, but definitely pivotal key moments.
And I think it's also, you know, the buck stops with the leader, you know, everything rises and falls on leadership. So T'Challa has to probably shoulder this blame ultimately more than anyone else. So
all hail the queen.
Maybe. We'll see. Black Panther 2, we'll see.